Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio, and this is going to be a fun one. Today, we're going to talk about organizing your space and organizing your time. That's something that a lot of small business people struggle with, especially this time of year when you got the kids, they're coming, they're going, you don't know which way is up. And today we have two experts on organizing with us. We have Diane Quintana with DNQ Solutions and John DeBeatty with Time Space Organization. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Who wants to kick it off? Tell us a little bit about what you're up to. Diane, let's start with you.
Sure. I'm up to organizing busy moms, busy families, helping them get everybody ready, set, as you said, to get back to school and back into the swing of things.
And Jonna?
One of the things I like to work with is paper management. If you're in a small business, you know how that paper can pile up and how it's got to be handled, filed, so that you can find it.
So now, when a business person, since this is the show focuses a lot on business, small, mid-sized business people, how does kind of organizing help them maybe take their business to the next level? It sounds like it's something that they would neglect, not because they want to, it would just kind of organically just kind of creep into their lives, disorganization.
Well, one thing is if they don't get on top of their paper, then they're always working from behind. Mm-hmm. So they're losing time digging for that sheet of paper. They may miss an opportunity because something got buried. Mm-hmm. So it's very important that they work up a system of files and tabletop files so that nothing is scattered amongst their desk, but everything is in order.
The other thing they can do is manage their time effectively. And a lot of people like to think that multitasking is an effective use of time, but actually multitasking is a time waster.
And now, is that something that I guess people think they're good at it, but they're really being inefficient because they have like their brain can't kind of focus into one thing?
That's right. When it takes your time, your brain time to refocus when you switch tasks. Mm-hmm. So essentially, you have to redo what you've already done in order to get back up to speed when you switch between tasks.
And then why do people think that that's more efficient?
I don't know why they think that, because it's really inefficient.
But they think like, I got like 50 tabs open. I'm paying attention to my kid. I got work going on.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't work. It just does not work. You're right. They do like to have multiple tabs open, and then they find that their time slips away from them, where if they would give 10 minutes to each task, they'd get much more done.
Now, a lot of times in your work, are you spending time on the kind of psychology of the problem to get to the root of the problem? Or are you more just kind of, hey, use this, you know, filing system, use this kind of paper and checklist system?
No, each time we go in and work with clients, we individualize what is working for that client. What is their goal? What is already working? We don't ever mess with anything that is working. Mm-hmm. So whatever filing systems or plans we set up for them are based on their personality, how they work, and what's important to them.
So, but how about if they're just like clueless and they don't know what they're doing? Do you help them choose a kind of a path?
We ask guiding questions. And I start with what's working now. And if they say nothing, I'll start with some very basic questions. Can you find your keys? just so that we know what is working, and then we can build on that something for them.
Mm-hmm. So now, okay, then let's talk about what happens like when somebody realizes there's a pain that what I got going on isn't working. So what's typically the pain like a business person would have?
That they're always late.
So being late is a symptom of that you're not organized?
Yeah, absolutely. They're not planning their time efficiently. Perhaps they're not taking into account travel time. Mm-hmm. Maybe they are falling into the one more thing trap. You know, I'm just going to get one more thing done before I leave for this. And then they're always late.
So now, Jonda, do you have a...
Well, if you're going to have to be somewhere at a certain time, then you have to work backwards from that. Okay, so then I have to have my time to park the car I have to have my time to drive. I have to have my time to gather up my stuff. I have to plan the time to get my last cup of coffee and go to the bathroom. So when you start figuring out all that time, while your MapQuest may say 30 minutes, you'd better allow 45 minutes to an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something you have to learn as you go along. And but, we teach that.
So you teach that. That's we part. Do. So like what is an onboarding? So they come to you and they go, hey, like you said, I'm late all the time, or I'm feeling overwhelmed by all this clutter. So what's that first conversation look like?
Well, we ask exactly how many times a week are you late? Where
is there pre-work? Do you like send me a document that says here, fill out this survey, and then this?
I don't. I just ask questions. Yes.
You prefer kind of individualized, like through a conversation?
Totally individualized, because each person is different. Mm-hmm. Each person's problems are different.
And then, Jonda, do you have a similar onboarding process?
I do. I have a set of questions, an analysis worksheet that I go through by phone. Now, I don't just read it off. I talk it through, maybe jump from one thing to another as the conversation flows.
Right.
But then I do fill it out, and then I do send it to the client saying, okay, these are my notes on what we talked about, but can you add something, or did I get something wrong? And then that's where we build on what's your most important hurt. Where do we want to start? Because we can't blanket start everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
We want to pick one thing and really get that under control.
Even if their problem is having a hard time prioritizing?
We work on that. We have leading questions so we can help them prioritize and say, what's number one?
So, Diane, let's talk about your backstory. Were you always you were the girl that always had things in order?
Yes, I am. I am. I have always been organized and on time and ready to do whatever. But Jonda is not.
No.
So you came from a different...
I did. In fact, one time, my father used to say I should pick my clothes to match the floor of my room. And that one time he hid one of my shoes up in a chandelier and it took me weeks to find it. So, no, I learned to become organized when I became a special education teacher. And that was a survival technique that I had to have. And I was in special ed for 30 years. So that's where I honed those organizational skills.
So you were working with children with disabilities?
With special needs, yes. Uh-huh.
And then, so how did you pivot to this?
Well, I worked at that for 30 years. And then my last 3 years, I was a lead teacher for special education, intended to do that for the rest of my life. And about a year and a half in, I knew that that was coming really soon. So I had to retire, and I was looking for something that could use my skills. And I found this, and it fit like a glove.
But even though you yourself were disorganized?
Not anymore. Not after I was working in special ed.
Oh, that forced you to change?
That forces you to change. You have to have everything at your fingertips or you're dead.
So now, you tried at first in special ed to be the original you.
Yes.
Just disorganized. And
but
just...
that didn't last long, and I had someone mentor me and teach me the way.
So then that was the light bulb moment for you, where you said, I have to get my act together from an organizational standpoint or else this isn't going to work.
Absolutely.
You would have had to stop doing this, right?
Right. The teacher has to control the classroom, or the children control the classroom. And if you're not organized...
It's game over. Mm-hmm. So now, is that the kind of pain that most of your clients have, that they're in that kind of mental state where they're like overwhelmed, they can't function anymore, so
Absolutely.
They need a professional to come in and kind of mentor them and to teach them maybe some tactics that'll help them?
Absolutely. And that's why my first question to a client is, what hurts the most?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we start. So, you know, is it the paper? Is it the time? Is it the goal setting? Is it the prioritizing? What hurts the most? And that's where I start working.
Jonda, same for you?
Pretty much. I'll say, what is the most important thing to you right now? And where do we want to start? If you give me three things, I'm going to say, well, of those three things, which do you think we would attack first that would give you the most feeling of success?
And then once they kind of determine what that is, how quickly is it where there's a noticeable kind of relief of this pain?
It depends on how willing the person is to make changes, because nothing changes if nothing changes.
Right.
Right. So unless they're willing to buy in to some habit changes and create different habit loops, there nothing is going to change. So we can suggest, you know, it's the old, you know, you can lead a horse to water, right, but you can't make them drink. So
you don't come in there and say, okay, they want to fix this. So then you make it all perfect and then you leave and then it just reverts back to, because you never solved the problem, right? You just kind of put a Band-Aid over the problem.
Right. And we don't make the changes. The client makes the changes. So we can suggest ways to change, and then the client tries different ways. But oftentimes it takes two or three attempts to find the method that's going to work best for that person.
And then, but some of the actions that you do are physically coming in and re-changing their filing system or...
With them, though. We're not going to change it without them working with us.
So you won't just say, okay, we agree, I would like a filing system and I would like these color-coded things, so then then you do that. It's not going to happen that way.
It doesn't happen that way, because then it won't make lasting change, right? And then that's the plan to make a
right. But that, as a business person, that's a choice from you of choosing certain types of clients. There are certain clients that say, "Look, I just want to make it nice for 6 months," and so if you do
that's not our client.
No.
So then you pass on those people.
Yeah, we want to transfer skills. We want it to be able to go on after we've left. And often we'll want to do a maintenance for a while afterwards just to be sure.
That it's stuck, some of these habits.
That it's stuck.
Now, some people have a hard time changing habits because this is a habit they've had for maybe decades sometimes.
Sure. So practice makes perfect. Nothing is going to change unless you practice the skill of changing the habit. So you write down different cues. You know, what are you going to do differently? What's the one thing you're going to do differently? Instead of having ice cream for dessert, maybe you're going to have fruit. You know, change something.
Right.
Instead of doing that one more thing before you leave the house, maybe you have something that says, stop, don't do that. So we maybe put up some post-its, maybe write down some cues, and then it's practice. And you change one habit at a time. You don't change everything at once.
And then when you decided to get into organizing, did you become part of like an association of organizers, or is this something that you just kind of, look, I know how to do this, I figured this out?
Oh, no. We both joined the National Association of Productivity and Organizing Specialists. That's NAPO.
And that, is that the main certification or the main organization that supports this?
Yes, that's the national association that supports this. And then we also joined the Institute for Challenging Disorganization, which is another group. And I became certified through both. So I'm a certified professional organizer through NAPO. And I am a certified professional organizer in chronic disorganization through the Institute for Challenging Disorganization.
Now, from the consumer standpoint, am I going to notice a difference by having an expert like you that's gone through multiple certifications as opposed to somebody that just, you know, watch a Netflix video or some YouTube videos on how to do this?
I would hope so.
So what's a big difference?
Actually, someone who is not trained can go in and do harm.
Harm.
Because they don't, they set up expectations that aren't real, or they have their ideal of what something should be that does not really fit in to the person. And so it cannot last. It's not made for that person. They can say things like, well, just throw it away. And it may be something that's really valuable and important to a person. So that's part of what we're working on, is developing systems, plans for not doing any harm when you go in and work with a client. It's easy to do if you're not trained.
To do harm because you're not giving enough weight to some of these items?
You're not listening enough. You're not buying enough into what that person wants. Not what you want. Not what you think is right. Not on your timeline.
So a lot of times the people that don't go through the certification, they don't understand kind of the psychology of the behavior?
I'm not sure that that's the way to look at this. You want a trained professional working with you so that person, the professional, doesn't impose their views on you. You want somebody working with you who's going to listen to you, think about your lifestyle, your habits, your priorities, and then have them create systems and solutions that will work personally for you.
Now, in each of your career, you took different paths to get to where you're at today, but at some point you decided to, do you specialize in a certain type of person individually? Do you have a specialty that I prefer to work with? Like you mentioned moms.
I did mention moms. I work with mostly people at home in mm-hmm. their homes, and I work with people challenged by disorganization, ADD, and hoarding. Mm-hmm. So those are very specialized groups of people.
Jonda?
And I work a lot with people going through transitions in their lives, and often it's older people because that fits with me. When they want someone to work with them, they may want someone who's just more their age group, someone who will listen, who's experienced a lot of the things that they've experienced. So I tend to target that. But I also will work with moms, enjoy working with moms, setting up classrooms for homeschoolers. So we do a lot of the same things, but I would say my focus is transitions.
Now, how collaborative is the community? Do you work together a lot?
We do. Mm-hmm. On jobs, we work together. Usually these are big jobs. Often they are hoarding jobs or closing down homes where someone has died. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of presentations together. We enjoy going out and educating the public and giving presentations. Mm-hmm. And we also write books together.
What are some of the books you've written?
Oh, we have, I think, our close to the heart right now are two children's books.
Children's books.
We have mm-hmm. Benji's Messy Room and Susie's mm-hmm. Messy Room. And that's for the 3 to 5 year old, or 3 to 7, I guess, year old child. And it goes in and talks about them learning how to clean their room with mother's help.
So you wish you had this when you were a kid.
Well, yeah, and Benji, funnily enough, is my son's name. Yeah.
And then when you're writing a book, how does that process work?
Fun.
It is. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. We send the documents back and forth to each other, and that works really well.
So you're not in the same room?
Sometimes,
but not often. Mm-hmm. I'll work on something and send it over to Jonda, and then she'll put her spin or her little magic touch on it and send it back to me. And between the two of us, we create something pretty good.
And then is it traditionally published or is it self-published?
The children's books were published by Page Publishing, which is, I guess, a vanity press.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then you have an upcoming book in the spring you're working on?
We do.
Yes, we
do. And what's the subject for that?
It deals more with chronic disorganization and hoarding and tips and strategies that family members and people who want to help can use.
What are some kind of clues that somebody might have a disposition towards hoarding? Is there something that shows up as when they're younger or like teens?
It can show up as young as 6, 7, 8 years old. Collecting and being able not to let go of something is a classic hallmark of someone who has a hoarding tendencies.
And then, so, but not somebody like, oh, I collect baseball cards. That's not necessarily the problem.
It's
the person who mm-hmm. doesn't throw away the wrappers or throws, it just takes it to an extreme.
Takes it to an extreme, exactly. Having a collection and then displaying the collection or looking at the collection, honoring the collection is something completely different from hoarding.
Mm-hmm. If the items that they're keeping takes over their house to the point where rooms cannot be used the way they're supposed to be used. You cannot totally, your bathtub, your shower is completely stacked full. You can't use it. You can't get to your bed. You can't cook in your kitchen. So that would be signs that it's completely out of control.
Right. Well, that's an out of control, but I was trying to see if there's kind of, before it gets out of control, if there are kind of things you can look for.
Besides just not letting go, yeah. It can, if the things become more important than the people, mm-hmm. If you cannot share, like for a young person, they don't want anybody touching their stuff. It's all theirs and they want to keep it to themselves and they don't want to go out. They'd rather stay with their stuff. That's another clue.
Now, doing this kind of work must be rewarding. Do you have any stories you can share of kind of befores and afters? You don't have to name anybody's names, but transformations, were you able to really make an impact?
Well, I know that one that I worked on was getting ready to be evicted from their condo because they would not let people in to change out windows, and they were doing. And so working with her, we were able to change it around. She also addressed some other problems that she had, and I got invited to her first birthday at AA. So that was, to me, something that where there was a real change.
Mm-hmm. And then it was a lasting change?
We hope so. I have not heard from her for a few years, but, you know, when you've made that step, I think you probably
have. That's a big
one.
Diane, for you?
I worked with a gentleman whose home was really full of items, and it was really because he didn't know how to recycle them. So he had piles and piles of cardboard, piles of styrofoam, electronics, papers, cassettes, books, but piles of everything. His home was absolutely full. And once I figured out that he was trying to be really environmentally conscious with everything, and we found places for him to recycle the electronics and the styrofoam and the cardboard and everything else, the home was cleared out pretty quickly.
Because that's a mental shift, and once there was a place for the stuff, then there was a place for the stuff.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Good stuff. Well, if somebody wanted to learn more about what you're up to, or they have a challenge in their own homes or businesses, what's the coordinates for you, Jonda?
I work anywhere in Metro Atlanta. I also do virtual organizing.
Virtual? Over the phone or Skype or video?
Skype, mm-hmm.
And then, so website?
Yes, timespaceorg.com.
Timespaceorg.com. .com. Mm-hmm. And Diane?
Oh, they can find me at my website, dnqsolutions.com.
Good stuff. Well, thank you for both sharing your story today.
Yeah. Thank you.
Hang with us. We've got one more guest. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, got Catherine Chestnut with Alkaloid Networks. Welcome.
Good morning.
You had the big dramatic entrance. We like that. Thank you for that.
I am never late. There was somebody I was waiting on who was supposed to come in for a tour this morning, and they were late.
See that? And how do we fix that? We got the people in the room that should be able to fix that.
And then I left. Well, it's funny that you say that. My mom, I'm never late. Because my mom is always late.
So that's you being rebellious?
And that made me crazy. She's the person that misses airplanes.
Airplanes?
Out
of sense of pride?
No, just
things happen.
Just happens.
Well, we're here to talk about, you were on recently to talk about your co-working space, but we're here today to talk about the Co-Working Alliance.
Yes. It's a big week for us.
It's a big week. So a lot of stuff going on. And but for the people who aren't aware, co-working is a thing now. Maybe 20 years ago, it wasn't a thing.
I don't think we had that name for it 20
right.
years ago.
There was like executive suites.
Right, right. Actually, I think the official deliberate bringing together of people in a collaborative environment was in 2005.
2005 is kind of the marker?
Yes.
And then at some point, you started your own co-working space. It wasn't 2005.
No. It was 4.5 years ago, yes.
Right. And then at some point, you're like, hey, there's independence, kind of people just kind of figuring it out, making it work because they have a vision. And there's kind of corporate-y, large enterprise companies involved in this space.
Right. Absolutely, yes.
And then you picked a side to be on?
I don't know that I picked a side. I think that there's a place for all of the types of co-working
right.
that is out there because people have different needs. They have different visions of how they want their workspace to be. And the people that come to, say, my place are looking for something that's many of my members say my space is very comfortable and homey, and they feel much more welcome there than they do in a larger right, more corporate environment, which feels a little sterile and cold.
And then, so when you went out on your own to develop this and you had a vision of what it would be like, and it's thriving community you've built there.
Yes.
And it's right next to the Beltline. It's a wonderful facility. It's beautiful. At some point you said, let me kind of bring some of these other independent people together and other co-working people.
Well, so.
Like, what was the impetus to saying, hey, look, maybe we should all kind of at least hang out a little bit and not be like, look at it. I mean, some people would have said, look, they're my competitor. I don't want to talk to them.
Well, but I don't ever.
I know, that's not
I never have that perspective. I think at first it didn't occur to me to start an alliance. However, I did start to meet people within the co-working community within Atlanta. For example, Marguerite, that owns 311 co-working in Chamblee, sent me an email completely out of the blue about 2.5 years ago and said, I know this is totally random, but I'm thinking of opening a co-working space. Can I come and see yours and talk to you and see what you're doing? And I said, of course, sure, come on, come on. And she and I have been friends ever since then, and her space just had its second anniversary. So there's that. There was another small co-working space in Candler Park where I became friends with the founder. And just over time, I learned about the different spaces around town. And when somebody would come or call me and be looking for something specific, that I didn't offer that service, I would say, you know, you might be better off served calling Strongbox West or 311 Co-working or Edwin Jarvis Co-working in Avondale Estates. So it really, it was, so initially that was kind of how, you know, I wanted to know what was going on in my immediate vicinity. But then I got more involved in the industry globally and started attending the Juicy Conference, which is the Global Co-working Unconference Conference. Juicy for short.
Right. And that's like a lot of people like you.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely. And I went there and I met people who had founded alliances in their cities, Kansas City, San Diego, Toronto, Denver. And it was like a light bulb went off for me because it had never occurred to me previously. So I did some research on that and I thought we should really have that in Atlanta. Why? We're a big city. We should have that. But just why wouldn't
there's,
we?
There's more independent co-working spaces than people may be aware, right?
There's over 35.
Right. And they're like kind of in neighborhoods and communities, and it's kind of geographic in a lot of ways, right? It's the people are there that live there or work in that environment or want to be downtown or be in a certain place.
Right.
So then they say, let me pick that location.
Right. Or unless they're looking for something specific that maybe another space provides a service.
Right.
They may go to a different space, but a lot of it is very hyper-local. Mm-hmm. A lot of the people that are there live within a 2 or 3 mile radius.
And then at first, was it like, what's the profile of a member? Are they people that are just don't want to work at their house? They have a dog that barks or kids that run around? Like, what's kind of the impetus to say, you know what, let me find a new space?
I actually developed my client personas, and there's three personas.
Mm-hmm, okay.
This is my marketing background coming out.
There we go.
So I would say, probably the first one is the solopreneur, small business person. They've been in business for a while and they don't want to be and working at their dining room table anymore because it's not professional.
It's hard to bring clients here.
It's and the coffee shop won't do it.
Right.
Right. So I have one gentleman who's been there for 3 years. He started off, he was very skittish about he got a dedicated desk to start with. And he started with that. And then within a year, he had gotten a second one, and he had two part-time people share that desk, totally fine near him. And then last year, he decided to get an office.
Took the leap.
He took the leap. But he says quite plainly, he was very, very hesitant to move outside of his home, but he's really glad that he did.
Because some of the things that maybe people aren't aware of when you work in a co-working environment rather than your home or a coffee shop, I think are those kind of collisions and the serendipitous moments that happen so frequently, it's hard to even call them serendipity, right?
Right. This particular gentleman designs websites, and he has designed, I would say, 5 or 6 websites for people that are in the co-working space itself. So it's
right. If he was at his house, wouldn't have happened.
Wouldn't have happened. It might have happened. It's unlikely. But so that's my first persona, is that small business person that's not necessarily looking to grow quickly, but just kind of slow and steady.
Right. And they have a skill and they are doing the work, and that's all they're doing. Like, they're not trying to build an empire necessarily.
Right.
They're just kind of, you know, this is what they do.
Right. The second persona would be remote workers. So I would say 40% of the people that are in my space are remote workers on some level. Some of them have dedicated desks that they work for headquarters that is located elsewhere. I have one woman who works in my space who lives in Edgewood, whose offices are in Alpharetta. She doesn't want to go to Alpharetta.
Right.
But then...
And they're happy to pay your fee to keep her happy.
They are very happy to pay her membership. In fact, they just added another person at my space who lives in the area.
And that's an area where that you could collaborate with another co-working space. Like if the person lived in Avondale, maybe it's more appropriate to join the Avondale one.
Right. Right, exactly. And then there are some small offices where there are remote offices to a headquarters that may be located elsewhere. Mm-hmm. So again, there's that remote person. And then my third persona is more of what people usually think of when they think of co-working spaces, is a startup. Uh-huh. And I have some of those as well, but I would say, you know, there's other spaces in town that are
maybe a better fit for that.
Better fit for them because they have more, events?
Services and events.
And services
that support that.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I will be very blunt and let people know that you may be better off going to someplace, this other place, because they have a stronger support system for startups
specifically. Yes. And that, have you found that that's what a lot of the co-working spaces are? Some of them are kind of catch-all like yours, where you can serve several different types of personas, but some are like, we're all in on makers, or we're all in on startups, or we're all in on where that's where they're focusing in on one of those groups, and they're just trying to be the place to serve that group.
There's a few of them like that in town. Mm-hmm. Switchyards, for example, specifically targets B2C type businesses. Mm-hmm. That's their niche. And that's, you know,
right.
If somebody's coming in and that's they're targeting consumers, I let them know that like this might be a better
right.
fit for you, just so you get the type of support that you're looking for.
Right. I ran into a person came in here recently. I don't know if I've talked to you since then. They do Prep at ATL. That's like a co-working space for commercial kitchen. Like there's 50 food trucks working out of there.
Right.
And
right.
You can rent space just for whatever you need for that night or whatever.
I think, and I love that there are niches, but then there's also the ones that are like mine, where it's very open.
Right.
And actually, I personally love the diversity.
Right, because then you can have these weird mashups that, you know, that people would never think that they would never meet in real life, except there.
There's definitely some mashups that go on.
So now, when you're working on the Alliance, how open was the community to saying, you know what, that is something that I'd like to be a part of? Was it hard to get people to support the Alliance?
I would say that the people that are in the Alliance are all in and very excited about mm-hmm. it. We have six spaces that are currently a part of the Alliance right now, hoping to expand that.
Right. And there's 30 something that
are
out there.
There's over 30 in the city. So definitely.
There's room to grow.
Right. But this week is particularly exciting for us.
And why is that?
Because Atlanta Coworking Day is Friday.
And then what happens? Big party at your place?
Well, in a way. So I would say all the places, all the spaces that are in the Alliance are offering a free co-working day for anybody this week. We're also offering 20% off any level of membership if you join this week. And in addition to that, we're all doing something different at our space to celebrate on Friday.
And what are some of the things?
Well,
you can talk about yours.
Well, I can. I can. I am on Friday morning having a local creperie, Juliana's Creperie, because it's about two blocks from our space. Come in and make fresh crepes for anybody that wants
them. Anybody that shows up.
Anybody that shows up. So I, and I like, I feel like it has a twofold purpose. Like, one, we all get a really good breakfast because Andrew makes a good breakfast. But two, exposing the members to some local places that they might not have been aware of.
Right. Now, what's for you kind of the kind of mission that you're, there's a bigger why behind this than just,
Yes.
Than just kind of making money on co-working spaces.
For the Alliance?
For you personally and the Alliance.
Well, the Alliance is a nonprofit.
Right.
It's a 501c6. So we're not making money. We're not looking to make money.
You're just trying to serve the community.
Absolutely. And it and when I say serve the community, serve the citizens of Atlanta by giving them the ability to see what's available to them. One of the things that we're going to be working on once we get past Atlanta Coworking Day is a passport system. I don't know if it's going to be called a passport, but a way to encourage people to go and check out other spaces.
And then, so if you're a member of one, you're kind of at some level of a member of the other ones in the Alliance?
We haven't worked that out yet, but I think one of the things is the passport is designed to encourage people to go around to spaces, go to maybe five spaces, and once they select one and they, you know, bring in their passport or their book or showing that they've done that, they would get a discount off of their membership.
So membership has some benefits.
Absolutely.
And then how does it fit into kind of the world of co-working spaces? Is there, like, do you all go to that national convention, the members of the Alliance? Like, are you, what are some of the benefits of being part of the Alliance other than just kind of sharing what you know and the good, the bad, the ugly, maybe pass some referrals? Are you learning best practices? Maybe what's working in Kansas City? Is there some way to kind of disseminate some of these learnings?
I would say yes. Yes is the short answer, but I know that when I go to the Juicy conference, I don't think that anybody else in the Atlanta Coworking Alliance has done that. But when I go there, I learn a lot, and I've shared a fair amount. The passport idea was one that I got from the Denver Alliance, and I've gotten information, and I've spent time talking to the ladies, one woman that founded the Kansas City Alliance and another woman that founded the San Diego Alliance. And so taking some of those ideas and bringing them back to ours. But the fact that we, because all the co-working spaces that are here in Atlanta, all the independents, we're all in our little
bubble.
All in our little bubble.
Right. You're serving your community. It's hard to know what's what 10 blocks away.
Right. And I think we have felt an immediate camaraderie because we're not just lone rangers anymore.
Right. And you're all kind of on similar paths doing similar activities.
Right.
So it's nice to have other people kind of that have been there, done that, maybe give you some hints.
Right. Absolutely.
So now, so when you decided, okay, I'm gonna start this alliance, and you found your friend in Decay, was she the first one?
Marguerite? Marguerite in Chamblee.
Chamblee.
Yeah, she was the first one. I sent her an email and I said, what do you think? And she goes, that's a great idea. You've been talking about that forever.
So then how did you kind of get the third and the fourth? And how has just been kind of word of mouth and just kind of nagging the people until they succumb to your charm?
I called every single one of those places.
All 34 that are out there?
I found out who was in charge and called every single one of them. Followed up with an email, and just, you know, we'd be delighted to have you join. Here's my thoughts behind this, but this isn't just the Catherine show.
Right.
This is about us.
Right. It's an alliance.
Right.
Right. So then, so you got half a dozen people in, and you have goals of growing that. I mean, you can't force them to be part of this, but you can create things so that they want to be part of this.
Well, yes, I would love it if we could have at least 10, because that would be a third of the spaces in the metro area. But something surprising came up is that there's a gentleman who used to own a space here in town and sold to his partner. And he started software that services co-working spaces. And he found out about it and he called me and said, I want to be a part of this.
And he doesn't have a space.
He doesn't have a space.
But so he's aware of how it works.
Right. And so all of a sudden we were like, oh, well, okay, how do we make this work? So we came up with a affiliate membership for companies.
People that serve the co-working.
Absolutely. So now we have that too.
There
so,
you go. Got one of those.
I have one of those.
So now if somebody wanted to learn more about the Alliance, is there a website for that?
AtlantaCoworking.club.
And then, so then now we give you access to the people that are part of the Alliance and they can see what's what for this co-working week.
Yep. Absolutely.
And then they can see what's happening at each of the, at the communities. Right.
Some of it's on the website. I know Marguerite has the Waffle House food truck coming.
Oh, nice.
And
Food trucks, are they a common thing that shows up at some of these co-working spaces? Or is that a...
I don't know. Not mine.
Not yours? Well, you have a bunch of restaurants next to yours.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Right. So I would think that that would be a collaborative way to kind of, if you're out by yourself a little, that's a nice way to serve your members and the food truck people. So now for Alkaloid, website for that?
Alkaloid.net.
Alkaloid.net. And that's where you can join and you can become a member and learn what's what there.
Yep.
And it's right on the Beltline. It's steps from, what, half a dozen restaurants at least?
Oh, probably more like two dozen because it's right there next to Krog Street.
Right. Well, good stuff, Catherine. Thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thanks for having me.
And then one more time for the co-working. Is there Facebook and you have all the...
All of the social medias.
So then at Facebook, it's Atlanta Co-working. If they look there, co-working, AtlantaCoworking.club is the website.
Yes.
All right. Well, once again, thank you for sharing your story. And thanks to all the guests for sharing their stories today. This is Lee Cantor for Atlanta Business Radio. We'll see you next time.
Thanks.